I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Hey, wrestling fans, it is I, CM Jew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your wrestling Jew, CM Jew, not to be confused with Thomas Primetime Mattis over at Thomas Prerogative. People always confuse us for the same guy, I don't know why. But, you know, it's episode 67, and this time on CMG, we finally get to a WrestleMania that understands the idea of scope, understands the idea of scale, understands and returns the WWE once again to its promised land. Once again returns WrestleMania to its promised land. This time out, we go to Houston, Texas for WrestleMania 17 in the Astrodome, where Stone Cold Steve Austin faced The Rock for the WWF Heavyweight Championship in Rock vs. Austin 2. The only feud to ever main event WrestleMania three times. That and more, of course, along with our Raw flashback to the March 17th episode of Raw from 1998. Ladies and gentlemen, this is CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. And yeah, this is coming out the morning of WrestleMania 32. I have to apologize for that. Sometimes life gets in the way, in case this life being schoolwork and just, well, I can push this back, well, I can push this back, and you keep pushing stuff back, and you realize, holy shit, it's the weekend of, and I should have done at least two of these last weekend. So, that's my fault. I apologize for that. For that reason, everything can be pushed back. This includes the aforementioned joke said before, episodes for other shows for the Absolution Network. But yeah, real life got in the way. I apologize for that. So, because of that, I do know what happened at NXT TakeOver Dallas. I hope to release another episode tomorrow, and in that case, I will know what has happened at WrestleMania 32, but after that episode, there will be an episode released next weekend. I have a couple of friends coming on. Granted, things work out, you know, things can always fall through, but just in case. But the plan is for them to come on, and we're going to be doing a full episode review of both WrestleMania 32 and NXT TakeOver Dallas. So, I'm not going to say anything right now. Trust me, I would love to, but if I did, I would be here for 2 hours. And that's just on TakeOver. So, I'm not going to talk about TakeOver Dallas. I'm not going to talk about WrestleMania 32. And we're pretty much just going to go straight into it with the Raw flashback. So, not much news, not much talk about the Hall of Fame. Again, all this is stuff that I want to talk about on that review show to celebrate everything that is going to be this weekend. I guess the one bit of news I can talk about is that they've announced some of the wrestlers for the Global Cruiserweight Championship Series, which will include Zack Sabre Jr., no surprise there, though everybody's excited for that, Tommaso Ciampa, which I guess he falls into the category, Johnny Gargano, Rich Swann, who all, those three are all in contract with WWE, and then there's there's two more guys that I've never heard of. One is an Israeli, I don't have the list in front of me, by the way, but one is an Israeli wrestler who I've never heard of, and another is from Hong Kong promotion. So I'm going to be very interested in seeing those guys, because I've never seen them before. And that's the thing about, you know, this Global Cruiserweight Series, is that it will hopefully give wrestlers that people maybe never heard of before a chance to make a good first impression. And if I could talk about NXT TakeOver Dallas, that would be a really good segue into a great example. But again, I can't talk about NXT TakeOver Dallas. I know you're screaming at your screen right now. I know you are. I know you are. But you're just going to have to wait till next weekend. Trust me, it's worth the wait. You know, it's like how we had to wait for 2 months for this takeover. I'm going to stop now before I break my promise. You're going to make me cry. But anyway, so those names have been announced for the Global Cruiserweight Series. I have a very strong suspicion we'll hear other names soon, including one. Again, can't talk about that. God damn it. Anyways, so that's something to look forward to. But, you know, another thing that people were looking forward to back in 1998 was WrestleMania. And, of course, the March 17th episode of Raw continued the road to WrestleMania. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into our review of the March 17th episode of Monday Night Raw from 1998. Take it on the road and do what we feel, so they can see that we are real. Hit the mat, play a floor, make smash it good, we want more. Everyone, get on your feet. Wave your hands, turn up the heat. Got another show to go. We're all together now. Now. Yeah. And welcome back. And yeah, the March 17th episode of Monday Night Raw. Well, didn't have really much to it. I think technically there were only 4 matches. One of which I didn't even know was a match. It very convoluted. It was towards the end, Owen Hart had twisted his ankle and he was in a cast, and Triple H was trying to goad him into a match, and he never technically said he accepted. He just, you know, started fighting with Triple H, and I guess that got accepted as he accepted the challenge. I'm sure, because there's one more episode right before Raw, I'm sure there's going to be something about that. So we'll see. Because I can't remember off the top of my head whether, because, or at least in my head, I remember Kevin Owens coming in as the European champion. Or maybe it was Triple H. I just can't remember who, but I could have sworn it was Owen. I'm sure somebody was going to say it's wrong. I actually haven't watched WrestleMania 14 in 2 years. Since I last reviewed it, mind you. So, yeah. So that was kind of very convoluted. And the others were kind of like squash matches in a way. Like, one was D'Lo Brown versus Ken Shamrock. The Rock forced D'Lo into as part of, like, you know, if Ken Shamrock can, you know, defeat D'Lo in 2 minutes, he'll give him Intercontinental title shot that night. And he was until Brock got... Rock got involved in got D'Lo disqualified, to which they then proceeded to, you know, beat the hell out of, or he proceeded to beat the hell out of Ken Shamrock with a steel chair, leading to him, I would say, I don't know if real or kayfabe, but basically got a concussion. But one of the interesting notes here is, like, Rock's going to continue the punishment when Farouk actually gets involved, and Farouk says, that's enough. So... And again, continuing that story about the breakup of the Nation of Domination, or at least the exile of Farouk from the group, I should say. The next match was a squash match. It was Tom Barretti, I think his name is. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Versus the newly formed... Country star, Jeff Jarrett, the greatest entertainer in Hollywood, with, of course, with Tennessee Lee. That was a squash match that ended with, you know, Jeff Jarrett locking in the figure four, getting the win. Then you had a handicap match, as you had the NWA Tag Team Champions, the Headbangers, versus the Rock and Roll Express, and Jim Cornette, as part of, like, a 3-on-2 handicap match. Headbangers end up winning without Cornette actually getting the match, but the thing that happens after the match is Jim Cornette, or two wrestlers hit the ring, that are Bob Holly and Bart Gunn, or as they're, become to be known, the, Bodacious Bart and, Bombastic Bob. They knew Midnight Express. They beat up, the Headbangers. And then, of course, it leads to the turn on the Rock and Roll Express by Jim Cornette and... Or, no, I'm on the Rock and Roll Express by the new Midnight Express and Jim Cornette. So you had that, so which would lead into... without a doubt, the WrestleMania, the tag team match that was part of that WrestleMania. So that happened, and that those were the other three matches. This was a lot more story-based. You know, for instance, there was two big promos for Austin and Shawn Michaels talking about them as champions. You know, Shawn Michaels, you know, the amount of time he's been in the WWE and the excellence that he's surprised to. Of course, Austin being from Victoria, Texas, a blue-collar town, and, you know, his attitude and, you know, his popularity and the hell that he raises. Another story that's going on is that Sable came out and challenged Luna to a match that night. Luna sort of, well, except because it's on her term, which ends up being part of the final segment, which we'll get to. Because again, remember, this Raw is also broken out basically into 2 hours. So the first hour is Raw, the second hour is the War Zone. And in the first hour, the Raw hour... the Phoenix Sun Gorilla, who also has a Gorilla 316 shirt underneath his son's jersey, is like, does like flips and is doing tons of things like during the break. And towards the end of the hour, he's doing it when Kane comes out and choke slams and tombstones him. That would not be the last time we'd see Kane this evening, by the way. There was an interview with Vince that was laying down. The pathway for Austin versus McMahon, as basically Kevin Kelly got Vince to admit, yeah, do I want Austin as champion. and it was playing over the things that were happening the week before. It was a lot more story elements into it, definitely. At the beginning of the show, Ken Shamrock had a promo that he did before. His match. Oh, and there's one more match I just realized. I can't believe I forgot it because I was like... It was my favorite segment of the night. Cactus Jack versus Billy Gunn. Now, at the beginning of the match, they again bring out a dumpster. One thing that was sort of I felt convoluted about the match is before the match, Owen Hart came out to be on commentary, and he'd be on commentary for the rest of the night, or at least until the incident with Triple H. But he really only said two things, and so he was there for a good 20 minutes, did nothing. But throughout this match, you know, Road Dogg was on the mic talking. Billy Gunn gets disqualified when, you know, Chainsaw Charlie is getting the... Did I say Cactus Jack? I meant to say he faced Chainsaw Charlie. And Chainsaw Charlie gets the upper hand, so DT's about to get the victory when Road Dogg comes in and breaks up, disqualifying Billy Gunn. But Chainsaw is able to fight them off, knocks Road Dogg out of the ring, and then DDTs Billy on the title. Then Cactus Jack comes out, and they hogtie Road Dogg's feet and hoist him up. not like all the way to the rafters, but like a good, like, I'd say 7-8 feet off the ground. And of course, he's upside down. And then they proceed to beat up Billy Gunn some more. And it has this great line where, you know, Cactus Jack, like, let this be a lesson to never leave your partner's side. But Road Dogg, and by the way, this is Mick Foley saying this, Road Dogg, I have to confess to you, I got you up, but I don't know how to get you down. So I best you better call somebody. It's like, God damn, Mick. That was good. And that was just like this, it was that little peak. It's like, that comedy that, you know, I think we have come to so much appreciate from Mick Foley. You could see it right there. So, like, that little gem that was a preview of what would become later in Mick's career that I come to love so much. It's the type of sort of humor, little dark humor, that would lead to things like the cheap pop, which, again, if you saw the interview with Stone Cold on the live Stone Cold podcast this week, and all that build up to that cheap pop, like right here in Dallas, Texas. There's cheap pop. That also reminds me that goddamn WWE for editing out the cheap pop in the YouTube version of Mick and Dean Ambrose's segment from a couple weeks ago, which if you see it on YouTube, you don't realize it, but, you know, when they're talking about the Hell in a Cell match that Mick was in because they were in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and it's like, the Hell in a Cell match? The Hell in a Cell match? The Hell in a Cell match? Yeah. King of the Ring. King of the Ring? Yeah. The Hell in a Cell match, the King of the Ring that was right here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? It's like, got the cheap pop! So, but, you know, I really enjoyed that match. That was probably my favorite match of the night just because of the ending segment to it. The final segment of the Raw was Sable and Luna get together. It's this whole big thing to where they're trying to keep them. I don't know why they're trying to keep them away from each other, but I guess they are, or for whatever reason. And it ends with Sable finally getting her hands on Luna, like tearing her shirt and beating up on her. Goldust and Luna escape. Then all of a sudden the officials get out and just Mark, Mero, and Sable. Sable apparently had hurt her ankle when all of a sudden the lights go out and here comes Kane. Mero heads for the hills saying he's going to get help. And we wonder why they can never make the guy successful. So that happens. And so it's Sable's left there all alone with Kane and damn, why am I blanking on his name? Holy hell. Paul Bearer. Sorry, blanking statement there. when all of a sudden the lights go out again and the gongs hit, and then Taker appears on the Titantron and does, like, you know, I'm going to send you to the fiery pits of hell, and a very great promo, and you will rest in peace, and call for lightning that hits the sarcophagus on the stage, That probably should have lit on fire as soon as the lightning hit it, but yeah, missed up by pyrotechnic crews, but it does catch on fire on this fictional, what's supposed to be this approximation of Kane in there, send a message to Kane, and that's how we end the Raw. So overall, not a lot of action. Five matches total. One of them really didn't feel like a match. Though I guess became a match. I don't know why. A lot of promos. A lot of storytelling. Really was, I felt, not as good as the past Raw. It did its job. It could tell the stories that they needed to going towards WrestleMania 14. But yeah, there's really, really nothing important, or at least there's nothing that feels important about that Raw. So at the end of the day, I give this Raw a 2.5 out of 5. It's like right in the middle. There's enjoyable stuff. There's just nothing that feels important. So that's the Raw for March 17th, 1998. Now it's time to go to something a lot more better. Now it's time for us to review one of the best WrestleManias of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our review of WrestleMania 17. Let's give you the rundown. WrestleMania 17 by the World Wrestling Federation, sponsored by Snickers. Hey, the same sponsor for WrestleMania 32. This took place on April 1st, 2001, And boy, did they get an April Fool's joke at the end. Well, it wasn't, but it maybe should have been. But anyways, to an attendance of 67,925 at the Reliant Astrodome in Houston, Texas. Your color, your tagline was, "Houston, we have a problem." Theme song was "My Way" by Limp Bizkit, who also provides the theme song for The Undertaker with Roland. Your current commentators are Paul Heyman and Jim Ross, with Bobby the Brain Heenan and Gene Okerlund for the gimmick Battle Royal. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into our review of WrestleMania 17.
Think you're special, you do. I can see it in your eyes. I can see it when you laugh at me, look down on me, and walk around on me. Just one more fight about your leadership, and I will straight up.
Defeated Steve Blackman and Grandmaster Sexay. But our first match of the night is for the WWF Intercontinental Championship, as Chris Jericho faced William Regal. This, I felt, was a really, really good opening match. William Regal, I think, is very underrated. Still is very underrated to this day, amazingly, about just how good of a technical wrestler he is. And I thought he provided a great opponent for Chris Jericho, and it was a great contest. A lot of technical prowess put on here. There was a slight botch, but I really can't remember it in the match. But, you know, Chris Jericho ends up winning with the Lion Salt. And again, it was a great opening match. had a very back and forth, had a very even feel to it. William Regal was great at playing the heel as a heel commissioner, mind you. So I felt it was a really good opening match. Our next match features Taz and the Acolyte Protection Agency, aka APA, featuring Bradshaw and Farouk with Jacqueline facing the Right to Censor of The Good Father, Val Venus, and Bull Buchanan with Steven Richards in a six-man tag team match. Now, this was a very short match as far as it only went pretty much 4 minutes, or an exact time of 3 minutes and 52 seconds. But I bring this up because there are two matches that were very short. Well, there are three matches that were very short. One felt longer than it was. One felt way longer than it was. And one felt shorter than its time. Because it really wasn't a contest. This is the match that felt longer than it was. But in the good way, mind you, is what I'm getting at. And I say that is the fun of... This was a great match. It was fun. It was action from start to finish of the 4 minutes. Taz with suplexes. Right to Censor getting their ass beat. And of course leading... They get a slight moment where they get Taz down. But Taz is able to escape and tag in Bradshaw. And, you know... Just starts wailing on the Good Father. Good Father goes for the... I guess for the good train. And Bradshaw slips out and of course hits that wicked clothesline from hell. All via Stan Hansen. And yeah. Picks up the 1-2-3. Great moment. Again, the pop for Bradshaw. The pop for the APA and for Taz. And that was just... I really enjoyed that. It made the match really, really enjoyable. Even though it was very short. Our next match, I'm surprised it was under 10 minutes, actually, with the amount of stuff they did. By the way, it was 9 minutes and 17 seconds. But we have the WWF Hardcore Champion, Raven, defending against Kane and The Big Show in a triple threat hardcore match. Oh my god, this match. You know, everybody talks about the ladder match that happens later, and we will be talking about that. But... There was some wicked stuff done in this match. I mean, Raven being thrown through both a wall and through a plate of glass. People being run over by golf carts underneath the stadium. Of course, the match ends with, you know, Big Show has Raven up. He's going to chokeslam him off the stage into this, like, container that's there. When Kane comes from behind and hits a big boot to the back of Big Show's head, sending both Big Show and Raven into that thing, crashing into it, and then this big... They call it an elbow drop. It kind of looked more like a leg drop. I don't know what it was, actually. But Kane hits it on Big Show and gets the 1-2-3 and is the new hardcore champion. But, damn the stuff that they did. The picture, the go-kart. It's like... That was what was like, I saw like, no, they're not going to run somebody over with the go-kart. It's like, god damn it, they did. By the way, it is very, very funny to see, Raven trying to escape on the go-kart, Big Show, like, grabs it and forces it to crash, and all of a sudden you see Kane get into a go-kart, and the referee jumps on the back, and here's Kane driving this little golf cart, and it's like, by the way, I said go-kart, I meant golf cart, I apologize. But you get my point. Go this little golf cart, Kane. He's like, it's like what he does on Tuesday. So yeah, I thought it was a really good hardcore match. They did a lot of really interesting elements into it, which was part of the gimmick of the hardcore title was the interesting elements that they added to it. And I thought it was a very enjoyable match. Our next match is Eddie Guerrero, Latino Heat, with his fellow Radical member Perry Saturn versus Test, the WWF European Champion, And this was, of course, for the WWF European Championship. This was a good back-and-forth match. Eddie Guerrero showing a lot of technical skill. Test, again, showcasing just his explosive power with moves like, you know, the pump handle slam and coming out of the, you know, the corner with that big boot and just it sounding wicked. And it was a good back-and-forth contest. I actually do enjoy the ending. You know, Test is able to get the upper hand on Saturn and Eddie Guerrero, and he thinks he has Eddie when all of a sudden out of nowhere comes D. Malenko, who pulls Test off. And this, of course, Test beats him up. D. Malenko, to prevent himself from falling off the ring apron, grabs the referee, allowing Eddie to hit Test with the belt. And, you know, again, family motto, I lie, I cheat, I steal. Eddie Guerrero cheats to pick up the victory. So it's classic Latino heat that night, and he's the new European champion. And so, for that matter, I thought it was very good, very enjoyable match. They had great chemistry. Really enjoyed it. That leads us to our next match, and one of the match of the night candidates. Kurt Angle faces the rabid Wolverine Chris Benoit. I love this match. I love this match. Oh my god, I love this match. And the crowd loved this match. By the way, at this point, Paul Heyman and Jim Ross have been doing a terrific job on commentary. I really love them both on this. You know, Jim Ross does a great job of calling the action. And then Paul Heyman, God bless his soul, did a great job of sort of like anticipating and not anticipating, but like adding to JR's commentary in a great way that explained what was going on with the crowd. And at the same time, always seemed like you didn't know whose side he was on. So at the same time, feeling very slippery about who he was cheering for. But at the same time, it's one of those things where sometimes he would cheer for the heel and you would hate that, but he would do it in such a way that made sense to why he was cheering for them, and you hated it. It's sort of the same way right now he does it with Brock Lesnar. This is why Paul Heyman is our rabbi and our god. May he live forever. But this match in particular, they did an absolutely terrific job calling this match. The start of this match, the first, like, it seemed like 5 minutes, was nothing but, like, amateur wrestling. Like, amateur wrestling grappling. Not even, like, submission holds. Like, just trying to get the one up and, like, sitting positions and everything and popping out and everything and just completely on the mat. And, like, here you have, like, just pure amateur wrestling from two of the best goddamn wrestlers on the planet, and the people are loving it. It's like every time they would get done and do a standoff, the entire crowd in the Astrodome, the entire 67,000 would get up and be cheering, and you're like, oh my god. It was just, they were painting a portrait. And then of course from there, it was like, you had these segments, you had the amateur wrestling segment, and then it started getting physical with the chops and the punches and everything, with suplexes and going for submissions. And then, of course, the final segment, the lead up to it, to where they had wore each other down, and they were going for roll-ups and for submissions. And, of course, ending with Kurt Angle having to use the tights to get the victory after countering a cross-face attempt. This, of course, after Benoit had kicked out of the Angle slam. Again, Angle being a great heel, having to cheat to win. But both wrestlers looked tremendously strong in this match. Of course, in a backstage segment later, of course, to continue this feud, Benoit would attack Kurt Angle and lock the crossface on him. But it was just, oh my god, it was a terrific wrestling match. A wrestling match at WrestleMania. Which I think hadn't been seen in a long, 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 long time. I mean, yes, I love Benoit. I mean, well, I do love Benoit, but I mean, I love Austin and I love The Rock, but their matches, I don't know if you can call them wrestling matches as much as they are brawls. Again, we will get to this a little bit later. But yeah, terrific wrestling match. Like, oh. Again, this would be a great segue for something to happen in NXT TakeOver. We can't talk about that right now. Again, we will get to it. Yes, I'm going to tease you this all the way till next weekend. Next, we have another one of those matches that was really short that, well, to be honest, it felt long in the fact of, well, it felt short and long at the same time. It just really wasn't interesting. In one of her last matches ever, Chyna faces Ivory for the WWF Women's Championship. Ivory, of course, being the champion at the time. Pretty much a squash match. Here's the problem. Chyna didn't seem into this. Like, you could tell she had a I-don't-give-a-fuck attitude. To put it bluntly. And she smiled. I mean, she was smiling. And it's like, this is not serious. And it's just like, I understand maybe there wasn't anybody who could face her at the time. But it also felt like you could, this kind of makes me understand why they ultimately decided to part ways with her. Because there's an attitude there, like, I just don't care. And you could feel it in the match. And it just, it didn't allow me to be invested in the match. And I'm not saying this as somebody, again, WWE doesn't own me. I don't work for WWE. There's no motivation for me here to, you know, take WWE's side on this. But you could see, you could just watching the match, you could feel she just didn't care. And, like, her lack of investment in it made me not have a lot of investment. Like, I knew it was going to happen. It's like, why should I care? And mind you, I'm coming at this as somebody who, again, understands acting, again, that idea, like, again, I talk about how wrestlers are like actors. You have to care about what you're doing to make the crowd care about what you're doing. I mean, this is wrestling psychology 101, mind you. And, like, her not caring made me not care. Very short squash match that obviously was the worst match of the night and, like, nobody cared about. Next, we have Shane McMahon versus Mr. McMahon with Stephanie McMahon Helmsley in his corner in a street fight with good old Mick Foley as the special guest referee. And, of course, all the storyline behind this, this is part of the start of the storyline. Well, it had started about a month earlier, but what made it extremely special was, of course, Shane buying, in the storyline, WCW out from under his father's nose. And, yeah. You know, a lot of people don't like this match, and I can understand why. There's a lot of dead moments, a lot of wasted time where it's like, okay, Shane would be up at this point. But at the same point in time, there were some really good spots throughout the match. I mean, the missed elbow drop onto the table by Shane was a big spot. The coast-to-coast to finish it was a great spot. I mean, mind you, the whole moment leading up to that ending sequence where, again, as part of the story, like, Mr. McMahon's having basically this affair with Trish Stratus, and they're keeping Linda sedated. Maybe they should keep her sedated since she still supports Trump and thinks Trump would be a great candidate. Because somewhere, after that Katie Couric interview that happened recently, Triple H just says, like, oh, well, we're screwed. Fuck. Anyways, politics aside, which is hard to do when you hear somebody supports Trump, but still. Yeah, it ruined the match for me. It really did. It's one of those things that you support Trump. Now all I can do when I see you is hear you saying, I support Trump, and I can't be invested in the fact that fucking kicked the man who deserved in the ball, but, you know, pushing that aside. So, storyline-wise, it works. You know, Linda gets up out of her chair because, basically, Trish turns on Vince, slaps him, and then gets into a cat fight with Stephanie chasing her up the ramp. Vince ends up bringing what he thinks is a sedated Linda into the ring, sits her in a chair, like, watch what I do with your son, as he turns around to, like, hit him with another garbage can. Shane points around, and there's Linda. It's like, you motherfucker! Kicks him in the nuts. Mick Foley hits, I believe it's the double arm DDT. Puts Vince in the corner. Shane puts the garbage can and does the coast to coast. And really, that's mostly the match. I mean, the match was start Shane beating up on Vince with kendo sticks and everything. He sets him up for the table spot, misses it. So the second segment there was Trish bringing Linda down to the ring, and that whole segment where Trish turns on Vince. And of course, the final segment was Vince brings Linda in the ring, is beating up on Shane with trash cans. Finally, Linda gets up, kicks him in the nuts. DDT by Mick, set up by Shane, hits the coast to coast. So there is structure to the match as far as what happened. It just felt like the match took a bit too much. Like, this could have been a 10-minute match. Like, there was too many long pauses in the match. But overall, I enjoyed it. Again, or should I say then again, it's not hard to not enjoy Vince getting beat up. I think we can all agree to that. Now, it's not that hard to follow up that match, but goddamn what a match followed it up. Our next match is the TLC 2 match for the WWF Tag Team Championships as Edge and Christian face the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray and Devon Dudley and the Hardy Boys of Matt and Jeff Hardy for those WWF Tag Team Championships. Oh my god, this match, there's a reason this match is beloved. I mean, I think I like the SummerSlam match a bit more, the first TLC, just because I think what kind of hurts this match is the involvement of Lita and Spike and Rhino. But at the same point in time, this is still a terrific match. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a spot fest. It's a destruction derby. It's a car crash. But my God, those spots. I mean, and that's the thing. I want people to understand, I don't enjoy people doing, like, these dangerous spots if they're hurting each other. But they are somewhat trained. They are taking risks, and they know what they're doing. And the fact is that the spots look amazing. And when they come out amazing like that, and it's mixed bad in that result. But this match was amazing. And what made it amazing was that every spot built upon each other. You know, the match built and built and built every spot, to whether it be the concerto with the ladders, whether it be the power bombing of Jeff onto, I believe it was Edge, through a table. The setting up of tables outside for later in the night. Rhino and Spike getting the Swanton Bomb from Jeff on the outside from a, like, big ladder onto through them through tables. Of course, one table not breaking. Ha 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 ha, I'm Botchamania. speaking of a chant that happened at NXT Dallas, but again, we won't get into that. I'm going to continue to tease you. You just have to know it. But of course, everything building to that big spot that everybody remembers. Jeff Hardy hanging on the titles, Bubba moved the ladder, and Edge hitting the spear from a 20-foot ladder, and that call, and the crowd. Mind you, the crowd was so into this match. Jim Ross and Paul Heyman's call was amazing. And it's like, oh my God, that's just a spear from a 20-foot ladder. Jeff Hardy is broken smack dab in half. It's like, again, it becomes one of those calls that you remember JR for. It was just a terrific match. Of course, your champions, because the Dudleys were the champions at the time, Edge and Christian, because of help from Rhino. It was an absolutely terrific match. Match of the night candidate, without a doubt. And definitely deserving of its 5-star match. The next match, now this is the next match is the final match that went way longer than it seemed for its short time of 30 minutes and 7 seconds. But the reason for this is, it's a 19-man gimmick battle royal. And what made it long, the entrances of everybody was like longer than the match itself. But just to go down, everybody that came in, you had the Repo Man, you had the Gobbledygooker, you had Tugboat, Earthquake, Kimchi, Bushwhacker Luke, Jim Cornette, Duke the Dumpster Drosy, The Goon, Nikolai Volkoff, Bushwhacker Butch, Doink the Clown, Michael P.S. Hayes, The Fabulous Freebird, The One Man Gang, which, that surprised me, honestly. Like, I would have thought The One Man Gang would have came in as the African Dream, if you will. Kamala, Brother Love, Sergeant Slaughter, and Hillbilly Jim. And the Iron Sheik, who was your ultimate winner. And I said, like I said, it only went 3 minutes and 7 seconds. Kind of surprising. Let's see, who had the most eliminations? Kamala had the most eliminations. Michael Hayes got in a couple, I believe. Michael Hayes only got one. He got Repo Man. Like, Tugboat eliminates Gooker. Earthquake then eliminates Tugboat. Amazingly, Jim Cornette eliminates Bushwhacker Luke. Can't believe that one. Slaughter had, had three. And it is kind of funny, the segment that leads to it is, I think Sergeant Slaughter eliminates Brother Love, who somehow lasts, Bruce Pritchard lasts all the way to, like, the end of it, like, being part of the Final Four. Slaughter eliminates him, Hillbilly Jim comes and eliminates him at the same time, and then the Sheik comes in and eliminates him at the same time. And your winner, the Iron Sheik, he'll break your back and make you humble. And then, of course, Sergeant Slaughter, of course, being the patriot that he has to be, comes in, locks in the Cobra Clutch, and takes out the Iron Sheik. So that, at least, America is standing tall. Because, fuck yeah. Because it's Texas. So, you know what? At the end of the day, it was so enjoyable, especially because you had Bobby the Brain Heenan and Mean Gene Okerlund on commentary for the match. It just made it fun. Yeah, I'm not knocking its length, because it was fun. I just find it funny. It's like, it takes so much time, because it takes so much time for everybody to come out. Bobby Brady has the quote of the night. By the time the Iron Sheik gets to the ring, it could be WrestleMania 38. So remember that, guys. And let's see, in 6 years, when we have WrestleMania 38, there needs to be that meme. It's WrestleMania 38. The Iron Sheik has finally gotten to the ring. So, Iron Sheik wins, and a very enjoyable gimmick battle royale to see all the gimmicks. It was very fun. It was. You have to give WWE credit when it takes shots at itself, and it did there. Now we're to our two final main events, and the first one is The Undertaker versus Triple H. The American Badass versus The Game. of course, Triple H here is introduced by Lenny and Motorhead, who play him to the ring. And, you know, I enjoyed this match, I'll be honest, more than I did the final match. And this is probably my final match of the night candidate. I think, don't get me wrong, I did like the last match. Well, and we'll get to why I have issues. But this, I liked more. I wish this would have had the no disqualification. I mean, that's ultimately what's missing. Is like the last match gets an ultimate no disqualification stuck at the last moment. Of course, this was part of a storyline thing that would be revealed when Austin and McMahon teamed up and turned on The Rock. But, well, not that Austin turned on The Rock. They pretty much hated each other's guts. But that's besides the point. But, like, this could have used the no disqualification. And it probably would have made it go down a little bit more better. But even still, this was a great match. Again, started off great. Had a great sort of, started off with great sort of wrestling, battling each other, trying to get ahead. Referee gets knocked down. That allows them to go into the crowd. The choke slam off the camera setup. Because they have this big camera setup rig, and the chokes, you know, the beatdown that happens by Triple H there, and then ultimately the choke slam of Triple H by Taker off that. On what was obviously a pad, but goddamn did Triple H sell that motherfucker. He sold that motherfucker. And then, of course, the ending sequence through choke slams and tombstones and sledgehammers and ultimately last rides. From start to finish, I really enjoyed it. This was a heavyweight bout, and that's why I like it. This was two great heavyweight fighters just going at it. Just to prove to each other who the man is. Triple H, like, I'm the man. I'll beat everybody's ass. And, of course, Taker's like, it's his yard. And, you know, ultimately you see why their other two WrestleMania matches were also just as good. I mean, ultimately, I think we can all agree up to three matches that the WrestleMania 27 one wasn't the best. But a lot of people seem to knock this one. And I think that's because everybody's focus was on Austin and Rock. And maybe if this has been put in the middle of the card, like after China and Ivory, or maybe at the beginning. I don't know where you would put. Where would you put the match? Maybe I know what I would say. You would put it after Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit, and then you have the you have the China and Ivory match to be the cool down. But yeah, I think maybe it was just in the wrong place, and it had been put earlier in the card. People would appreciate it a lot more better. But still, I feel it's a great match. I feel it's better than the main event. And that may be the most controversial statement I say on today's podcast. But it had a great psychology throughout the match. I felt much better psychology than what would happen later. I was going to say what would happen in the next match, which we'll get to. Had a great big fight feel. And it just felt silky smooth, the match did, in my opinion. Or at least a whole lot more smoother than what would happen. Like, this was just a heavyweight bout of two sort of great ring generals. I guess we should get to the final match. The final match is Stone Cold Steve Austin challenging the WWF champion, The Rock, in what was, at last moment, turned into a no disqualification match. You know, this is a great rivalry, and this was just a brawl and a fight. And Stone Cold not giving a hell. It went 28 minutes. It was the longest match by far of the night. There's a lot of issues, though, I have with the match. One, I felt the disqualification. While I understand with story element, I felt the no disqualification ultimately hurt it because it, the whole match felt like a brawl with ring bells and everything. And it just felt like, again, there's not much more they could have done after. I would have loved to see a lot more technical. And they have it. Stone Cold had the ability to be more technical. So did The Rock. And I would have loved more wrestling than there really was. Because there really wasn't any wrestling. This was just a fight. It was a brawl all the way through. Through the crowd, around the ring, ring bells, and exposed turnbuckles. All, using each other's finishing moves. And it just didn't feel like there was a lot there. It felt like there was a lot of wasted time. And they had the ability. I mean, in the match, they both luck on the sharpshooters on each other. That was great. There's a moment to where Stone Cold Steve Austin locks on the Million Dollar Dream, which is passed on to him by Ted DiBiase when he first came in. That was, I mean, they showed that they could do technical at certain moments. But, maybe it was because they were trying to capture that feel of sort of the old, like, brawls of WCCW World Class Championship Wrestling that was in Texas. But at the same time, it's like, I don't think it appreciated the wrestling ability that of both The Rock and in particular Stone Cold Steve Austin. I didn't feel like there was, I mean, I get that they hated each other's guts, but there didn't feel like a rhyme or reason, I think, throughout the match. That felt like there was a lack of ring psychology. And then ultimately, there's the problem with the heel turn. And I think Stone Cold has said this himself by now, that he now thinks that the heel turn was the wrong thing to do. And I think we have to discuss why it was the wrong thing to do. And it's because Stone Cold had reached cult status. And what I mean by that is that there were people, most of his fans weren't cheering for him because he was a good guy. They were cheering for him because they liked him. Because he was a badass. And he could be heel, he could be face. They're still going to cheer him. You can't put Stone Cold in a regular good guy, bad guy storyline. Even as it was as fun as it would appear with humor and certain things over the next year till the next WrestleMania, still, the point being is, you know, they love him for being him, and they don't want him to be heel. And it's not like Hulk Hogan, to where he turned heel and it was such a betrayal of trust. Like, yeah, we were getting bored of him, but we still had to, like, he's always going to be good, and Hogan turns heel, forms the NWO. I mean, the impact it had on me was for me to stop watching wrestling, because I felt so betrayed. Here it was like, why? Why? Like, there did not feel like any reason. It's like, if part of the buildup had included The Rock getting the one-up on Austin, and Austin felt like he was losing something, and that he needed an extra edge, that would have been a great storyline element. But nobody felt that way. Everybody felt that Austin was, if not equal, better than The Rock. So it felt like there was no rhyme or reason for him to team up with McMahon or anything like that. And then, of course, the finish of the match, I wasn't a fan of. Like, I expected the beatdown, the vicious beatdown with the chair. But what I would have liked is, like, beat down with the chair, and then he picks him up, gives him the middle finger, one more stunner, and then gets the 1-2-3. That would have been better. It's like, I almost feel like I'm nitpicking this match, but at the same point in time, I think these are all little elements that didn't help the match, because this had a big match feel. The crowd was into it. You had the two biggest stars. And this was a fight with them throwing haymakers. There's definitely moments I love in the match. I love, in some sense, where it goes to a brawl. But I feel like there could have been elements of more wrestling into the match. it feels like they're trying to hide. And again, WWE is always good at hiding deficiencies. But it felt like they were trying to hide the deficiency of lack of wrestling. And so, or at least that's what it felt like. I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm sure people will tell me wrong when I'm wrong. And again, I'm not saying this is a bad match. I just don't think it's as good as some people's. Like, apparently Dave Meltzer gave it, I believe, a 9 out of 10 stars. The ratings on Arena Wikipedia is from John Powell of Canadian Online from the wrestling section. Yeah, so it wasn't Dave Meltzer, somebody else, but still, this person gave it 9 out of 10 stars. Like, it's not a 9 out of 10 star match. It's still an enjoyable match, and it had a shocking ending. I guess the other thing is, when you think about that WrestleMania feud between Rock and Austin, and you think about who won, it's also a matter of the heel won 2 out of those 3 times. Because the next time Rock would defeat Austin at WrestleMania 19, Rock was heel and Austin was face. So, and yes, it was time for Rock to finally beat him, but they both should have been face. But that's a whole nother story. I have issues with the feud, leads to say. And I have issues because it was good, but there's an expectation there, I guess, that's on me. Either way, it's time for me to give my final thoughts. So, top 3 moments. Number 3, Undertaker choke slamming Triple H off the camera scaffolding. That was a major moment. Number 2, Raven being run over by Kane with the golf cart. Like, goddamn that hardcore match. But number 1 has to be the spear of Jeff Hart. And I know it's like, everybody would pick that. But it's such an amazing moment. It's like, how can you pick anything but that? As far as my top 3 matches, number 3 is Undertaker versus Triple H. Just a really good match. I think it's very underrated. And people should check it out. Number 2, the TLC match. And it is perfection, don't get me wrong, but there's one more match that I think is perfection. But Edge and Christian, the Dudley Boys, and Jeff Hardy put on one hell of a match. But what this comes down to is, like I said, my one nitpick about the match is that I feel that Spike and Lita and Rhino, and I know it was so to get them involved in WrestleMania, and it's this thing of like, we want to get everybody involved in WrestleMania. But sometimes that can be to the detriment of WrestleMania. And so, that little nitpick is what allowed me, what my number 1 pick, which is Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit. Oh, pretty much wrestling perfection. And this was still like early in their WWF careers. And they would build on this match a couple years later. Or about a year later, for that matter. Was it 2003? I believe it was 2002 when Benoit faced Angle. And they would build on that. No, it was 2003. Excuse me. I apologize. I was thinking of the wrong thing. So yeah, 2003, they would build on that moment. With that match. So, my number 1 match of the night was Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit. And that is it for this episode of CM2's Wrestling Reviews. Damn, that was a big WrestleMania. 12 matches in all. 11 on the main card. 1 on Sunday Night Heat. You know what? At the end of the day, WrestleMania 17 is a terrific WrestleMania. It's worth watching. It was a return to the... And that's what we didn't even get a chance to talk about. The return to the grand scale that WrestleMania deserved. Away from the smaller arenas and to these huge stadiums. It made WrestleMania feel like the Super Bowl, the event that it is and that it deserved. And it had the pageantry that it deserved. It was bigger and better, as it usually is in Texas. I give WrestleMania 17 a 4.75 out of 5. There are some, you know, like the China Ivory match brings down it a couple points, and there are a couple of things that bring it down just slightly, but yeah. I mean, it really is sort of the final big WrestleMania of the Attitude Era. I mean, a lot of people say that it is very true. And like I said, it would go, I mean, I would feel the Attitude Era would continue actually through. I feel really the close of actually the Attitude Era was the next WrestleMania, which we'll probably get to next year, because I mean, I've seen the match, but I'm not seeing the build-up to the match that is Hogan versus The Rock. So, or I should say, as far as watching that WrestleMania. So, no, maybe I'll go watch it right now. At the end of the day, I give WrestleMania 17 a 4.75 out of 5 stars. Terrific WrestleMania. Go watch it. So, that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. Like I said, next couple days, expect another episode. We'll get to what that is going to be about in just a moment. Remember, if any emails or comments or anything, you can email us at AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself at www.an.132productions.com. Make sure you check out all our other content, like Tom's Prerogative, Shin Tiger Curl's wrestling and anime videos, and of course, John Romus' Sentai videos, and tons of other stuff on the site. And make sure you check out all our friends, because this, of course, includes Matty J, TWK, and the WrestleCast. Check them out on the sidebar. And like I said, that is it for this episode. Next episode, episode 68, as we get to the wonderful number of 69. Jokes will be flying, but at episode 68, we cover one more WrestleMania before we review WrestleMania 32, and of course NXT Dallas, or NXT TakeOver Dallas, I should say. It is time to go Hollywood, as we look at the night that John Cena made his ascension to being the man, as the WWF or WWE champion, as he defeated JBL. Yes, I am talking about WrestleMania 21 from Los Angeles, California, as WrestleMania goes Hollywood. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
Each and every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe. I say that I believe. I stand on my two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. What's this feeling, my love will be holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave.